Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the TWM Real Estate Podcast, Into Double Figures, which is great. We're still here, still on air. Today I have with me Paul Candon, who is CEO of United Hardware, which is one of Ireland's leading builders, merchants and construction materials groups, supplying merchants and DIY stores throughout the country. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks Paul. Very much, Sean. Delighted to be here.
And thanks for joining me. I suppose we start with some background on yourself. Usually we like to hear where people came from.
We'll
start with that.
I'll give you the whirlwind tour then, I will. I suppose I left school back in the mid-80s and went straight out to work. I worked for a couple of years in Rocha stores, in retail, in operations, store management. I went back to college by night then and I started to study human resources. I moved into that function in the company and I worked up to HR manager. And then I left and I joined, forecourt retailer oil company Statoil as their group HR manager, and then moved on to HR director. And my operations background was always there with me from retail. So I was able to add a bit of value to their mission and vision of driving on and owning their own service stations and building out the retail concepts that they did. So that kind of quickly took over and extended out my career and into operations, HR, health, safety, and a property as well. You'll be glad to hear.
Good.
Yeah. At one stage, and then we got sold. We did. The Statoil crew came in one day and said, "Look, we're going to dispose of the Irish operation." We're going, "Oh my God, what's going to happen here?" Some private equity investors bought the business. They'd bought Shell previously, and they decided to merge the Statoil business and the Shell business. And I was all over that and, very involved in getting the synergies out of the two and so on. So my role kind of grew then, and I took over sales and marketing for the group and then moved on and became COO. And again, it was changed ownership a couple of times. Private equity moved it to Dennis O'Brien's camp, and then they decided to dispose of it to Couche-Tard, the big giant, I suppose, forecourt retailer. And at that stage, I felt, well, this is a good time to move on and cash in the chips, and because it's a different model when you're operating in, with Couche-Tard. So I left then, and that was after about 17 years all in all, right through forecourt retail and oil distribution. And I suppose then it was like, okay, what'll I do next? And there was a really good opportunity to go in and run McCabe's pharmacy chain. So it was a family business and a really interesting side of things in terms of healthcare and learning about patients and effectively, distribution of drugs throughout the country and so on. And so did a couple of years there, grew the business and improved margins, improved the operating systems and so on, and how they do things, brought my skill set there. And then I left there and I joined, went back into the PLC, big company Bunzl. And Bunzl is a big food service, disposables, washroom systems, hygiene, janitorial supplies, and beverage and retail solutions and so on. Part Irish operation, part of a big global PLC, and they consolidate products and so on and then resale them into every type of business, coffee shops and pubs and restaurants and everything like that, all product not for resale, effectively for use within the business. So that brought me into a lot of operational challenges, and obviously the pandemic hit at that time. And I was actually working my notice because I had been chairman of United Hardware and a vacant position came up for CEO, and they asked me would I take the CEO position, and mulled over a little bit and said, look, we have a journey, we have a plan, so I would. So COVID hit then, and I was working out my notice with Bunzl, and then took up the reins in the middle of COVID with the current job, United Hardware. And so that brought me up to the current operation.
That's it's pretty varied then. So you've gone from forecourt retailing to pharmacy to, so that's quite a lot of retailing experience, distribution and operations.
Yeah, a lot of, I think that's what my skill set is, very much retail, wholesale, distribution, and that's why it's a good fit with the current role. And that's why I suppose I did numerous executive jobs in that space, and then that kind of led me to get onto the MD CEO ladder, and to bring my broad experience to the business. And
great. Tell us a bit about United Hardware. hardware group. I've seen, you know, I've seen the brand, all right, but I probably don't know a huge amount about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we go under the radar a little bit, and for a number of reasons, I'll explain, I suppose. But it was established as a joint venture between two buying groups, Associated Hardware and National Hardware, back in 2009. Just after the economic crash. And, you know, it was, I suppose, the two groups came together to survive and that, you know. It's 100% Irish-owned business, supplies, operates, operates the Home Value retail brand on behalf of its members and so on. And we've got about 160 stores with 120 members throughout Ireland. 90 of them are branded Home Value. And combined turnover with them all would be about 500 million. So it's a big business. So we operate in every single county, and it's a very diverse kind of business, catering for, say, builders merchants who buy through us, DIY stores, garden stores, homeware stores, and we operate out of a purpose-built distribution centre in City West. We've about 200,000 square feet. We import, we distribute significant volumes to our members. Employment numbers, we'd have about 2,200 people throughout the group employed. And really, our role is to enhance the purchasing power for our members and give them marketing support, logistic advisory support, and so on. So very much a buying group working for our members. The key, I suppose, to us, and the key difference is, like, we rolled on as two buying groups from 2009, and it was a joint venture, and there was an attempted merger in 2015. Which didn't work so well. So when I came in, I said, look, this is a big priority, that we have to merge the two buying groups and really create one group, because we weren't really structured as well as we could be. We had three operating boards, and we needed to kind of tidy things up and get everything working in the right way and get the synergies going. So that was a challenging period of time, operating through COVID and trying to get some corporate restructuring done. But we completed it in 2023. We had to go through the Competition Authority in terms of getting their approval, which all worked very, very well. And we went live in July last year, 2023. So about 9 months operating now the new business model, which is going very well. So we sell everything from, you know, building materials, which is the big stuff like timber, insulation, cement and plasterboard, right through then to, you know, mid, which is like, you know, sanitary ware and heating, plumbing and everything to do with that and so on. And then on into, you know, lifestyle products, outdoor living, garden furniture, barbecues, a Christmas seasonal. Like, you know, last year we sold about 3 million of garden furniture throughout our network. And last Christmas, you know, from about November on, we sold 2 million euros worth of Christmas decorations. So that's
it. It's very diverse.
Yeah, and they're all great products and a great margin. Whereas, you know, we sell maybe 25 million euros worth of timber with a different margin, let me tell you, you know, and a lot tighter. So we really are trying to become the leading buying group in our sector and so on, giving kind of the independents a real opportunity to be competitive, because we're bringing them better pricing, better deals, allowing them being competitive in the local market.
So effectively you're the buying group, but then you have all these members, and they're varied between very large builders providers and small family DIY units, really.
Yeah, absolutely. From, like, there's a big diverse, you know, you're absolutely right. Big builders merchants, like, with real scale, real volume, doing a lot of work in their geographic area. They're supplying builders, they're supplying, you know, all sorts of tradespeople in everything they need. Like, the white vans are queuing up in the morning from 6:30, 7 o'clock, filling up for the jobs they need, whether it's tiles, timber, insulation, whatever, to the DIYer who might just come in once or twice a year and just wants a couple of lengths of timber and some solvents and advice, or somebody who wants to buy a new power tool and wants to step out of the Black & Decker space and get into the real quality Makita and DeWalt and so on. We're there to provide that support. The other thing that we have, like, a lot of our members are second, third, fourth generation even, so they've got, you know, really unique expertise.
Like a traditional hardware shop, local store hardware
Absolutely. Local. Yeah. If you want to know how to get something done, one, they're the places to go. Whereas, like, you know, if you want the mass market, you can go to some of our competitors, which I won't even mention their names, but people know who they are. But, you know, Irish operated independent retailers, multi-generational, I mean, very familiar with the local community, but they have great staff, great knowledge, in-depth knowledge on how things get done and what products to use when and so on. So I always marvel at that and so on. And that's
a real, to see some of them going, because I remember when I got married first and I got my first house, that's where I had to go to find out what I'm supposed to be doing.
I mean, it's a real USP and so on. And, like, to be honest, they can compete because they're in a buying group like United Hardware, and they can then avail of our pricing and our support and our purchasing power, because when you combine your volume, you're getting better deals, you're getting better terms, and that's what we do. And so they're out there competing with the big PLCs and doing very, very well.
And are they they're branded Home Value Hardware mostly, are they?
Yeah, we've 91 of them branded Home Value, and really the Home Value brand is heavily geared towards, you know, the more household DIY garden furniture, so we can kind of, you know, promote it online, promote it via social media. Like, if it's a big garden furniture set that's €2,000, and, you know, not everybody's going to be rushing out to buy that, but if you show that online and show a little video of it and so on, where do I buy that? Will I buy that at Home Value? It's much easier to communicate that way than trying to communicate 40 different family names who own these businesses. Yeah. But from a local point of view, if it's a local tradesperson, they'll probably gravitate towards the family name, you know, because they've always gone there and they have an account with them and they understand, they know who the proprietors are and they've dealt with them for years and they trust each other, of course, which is a big part of trade in our business, that, you know, we're going to get paid and so on.
Well, it's interesting, the, you know, few of the podcasts we've gone on quite a lot about essential retail, you know, and where and why that's become so popular now. So you're one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the podcast, is to get that kind of coalface experience of what's happening. And it's interesting that it's so diverse. So you have builders, providers, and you have the consumer, the ordinary consumer DIY hardware. So I suppose, going right back, the whole essential retail came into vogue following COVID. So what was the experience of both of those different sectors, I suppose, during COVID?
Sure. As I said, I joined in May 2020, in the height of COVID, and it was myself in the office, and we had our distribution centre open and so on. But obviously we had been liaising with them a lot before that. So our first decision was, are we essential retail? Will we stay open? Can we stay open? Are we allowed? But quickly we got that approval. And so then the next issue was, how can we get our employees in? How can we get them to operate safely and so on? So it was a huge challenge, I mean, because they share fork trucks, so they're jumping in and out. So how do you do that? And how do you get the PPE quickly? And how do you get social distancing quickly? And how do you all sit together in the same canteen? And how do we segregate and all of those things? And how do we keep sales staff, office staff away and working at home, yet we need people that are going to pick and pack and ship product out?
And be front facing.
And there was so many issues. We had so many decisions to make on the ground so fast, but we got it going. And the fantastic thing about it was, everybody was at home looking at their home saying, oh, I must do that, I must put up that shelf, I must fix that fence, I'm going to paint the house, I'm going to paint the rooms. Yep, I was too, but I was too busy and so on. And, like, paint became a commodity. I mean, I had a hotline to the paint suppliers, and we had people giving out all the time, and then the components of paint weren't available, the global supply chains were breaking down, you know, there was nothing we could do. I mean, and people were screaming because they weren't getting their proper allocation, and we never experienced those kind of issues before, but we got through it. And you know, when I saw the kind of growth we got, like, our businesses exploded. Now, to a point that the retailers and merchants on the ground, they could hardly cope.
Was it very different between the two parts of the business?
Yeah, very, very intense it was. You know, like, I mean, there were people queuing to get in. They had to queue in an organised way and so on. They only could let one or two in the store at a time. There was a huge amount of local deliveries going on and so on, but the demand was ferocious for DIY hardware, paint related product. Everybody wanted to do some project at home, which put huge pressure on the local merchants. Now, the other thing that happened as well, they saw new customers, and the customers saw a new outlet, and an awful lot of those people have stayed and held. So we actually got huge growth. We got, like, you know, our business went up about 60%. But we actually retained it.
And that's, but you know, the actual builders merchants though, were they negatively impacted or did they still?
No, they were really positively impacted and so on, because what happened is maybe some of the construction sites closed down for a little bit of period of time and so on, but they quickly opened up. But it was more than compensated by local people doing local projects. Like there was all sorts of projects going on, like from I'm going to insulate the attic to I'm going to build a wall to everybody was trying their hand at DIYing, and I suppose they were all looking at YouTube and everything for advice and ideas and everything like that. There was a huge amount of that going on. So whereas the trade business may have dropped off a bit, the domestic business absolutely exploded. It did. So it was great. It was a tough time though, and I don't think it would be sustainable. I mean, the staff were worn out. It was very testing. It was people were agitated, and it was a concerning, worrying time and so on, you know. But we got through it and fantastic benefit as well in new customers and a lot of learning.
As I say, we found in the property market there was a newfound love of the DIY operators
and
the grocery and the pharmacy and all of those. They're all come together to keep going.
Your back gardens became the new palace and the new parks and the new everything,
COVID was one issue we had to deal with, but I suppose one of the things that's really hit the property market and the construction sector heavily now is inflation as a result of higher interest rates. So the two of them together have two different impacts, I suppose. Yeah. But in terms of how are you finding that in terms of your customers, I suppose, the ultimate customers who are the contractors, or you know, how's that impacting the business?
It was really difficult to manage in such a big inflationary market. 2021, in COVID, the prices of things going up. I mean, we an awful lot of product that we would sell is imported into Ireland, so ships were in the wrong places, containers were in the wrong places. One couldn't be matched with the other. Container prices went from China, say, typically, $1,500 to $2,000 to $22,000 to $24,000. Yeah. So if you fill that container with Christmas trees, for example, for us, or you fill it with, heat pumps or showers or whatever we're buying from there, the price onto the product was just enormous. But not only that, then it was the lead times, the shipping times. So everything was askew. The supplies were broken. Then the inflation, really started to rocket through 21 and into 22. And it was like pointless for, say, tradespeople to be pricing jobs, because as soon as they had it priced, it was obsolete. Yeah. It was the same for builders. They couldn't cope. They couldn't, do anything. They couldn't build. They were afraid to price. What was going to happen with insulation? It was going up by 10% every month and so on. Timber was the same. So we were trying to price this in. We were trying to cope with all of the changes, even the practical changes in the systems, practical changes of communicating, trying to deal with all our suppliers and trying to make sure that we weren't, I suppose, getting ripped off and people were taking advantage of an inflationary environment and seeing, is this real? And trying to understand, well, what ingredients and why have they gone up so much? If you take paint and the components of paint, where is it coming from and why is it going up and why is it increasing? And trying to get all those answers done, as well as communicate, as well as implement it, as well as explain it to people on the ground who don't fully understand it and say, oh, this is COVID and everybody's ripping us off. But it wasn't. We were in a genuine inflationary environment. We still are, having had 10 to 15 years of virtually no inflation. We weren't used to it. Yeah. We weren't able to cope with it, but we got through it. And thankfully now, on the construction material side, whereas it was really bad up to about 20%, it's eased right back down to much more normal levels in the last 6 months and so on. So we've gone through the peak of it and it's come back down. But prices have not come back down to pre-COVID. Yeah. No, they have not.
So inflation has stopped nearly. But
it has stopped. Prices in some commodity products have come back a little bit, but not to pre-COVID levels. That's the reality. And therefore, that's knocking on into housing, build costs and so on, which is real. Where you have, in terms of, the whole construction sector having to reprice housing as a result of construction materials, that's actually real, The basic ingredients that go into a builder house have gone up a lot in price.
Yeah, and how
20% really.
And how has that impacted your contractors or builders are they still flying ahead now, or have they Has it impacted on your market?
It did impact. I mean, most definitely last year it impacted. There was a slowdown. I mean, we've got a target to build 33,000 housing units per year under the government's Housing for All. Look, that number is, you know, falling way short of what's needed. It should be 60,000 houses a year, most definitely in my view, to take the initial sting out of the market, and then maybe 50,000 every year thereafter. And like the stats around that are like, you know, say, you know, since the crash in 2008, the population has grown by 700,000 from 4.4 million to 5.1 million. That's a 16% growth, right? Now, if you take 10 years prior to 2008, there was 650,000 homes built and the population only grew by 600,000 people. But then if you take the 10 years prior to 2021, if you go back there and take those 10 years, there was only 163,000 homes built. From 2011 to 2021, 163,000 homes in total in that period. But what did the population grow by in that period? 500,000 people. So there's our problem, right? We need to be looking at our population growth. The population is set to grow by 1 million people in the next 10 to 15 years. So our numbers are completely flawed, completely outdated, and we need to get real. Now, we're still only managing to build around 30,000 houses a year. So why?
I just want to ask you, so you're on the cold face. What are your customers saying to you? What's the problem?
There's no one thing. You know, there's a couple of, you know, ongoing themes that we're reading on that. Planning is too slow, too complex. Everybody can object. Takes forever to get a decision. It's costing an absolute fortune. That's the first one you hear. The second one is the cost of tapping into services, ESB, water, Irish water, all of them, very, very difficult and so on. They're not listening to somebody who wants to build 2, 3, 4 houses. Yes, they're all over somebody who wants to build 300 houses because they've no choice. They've got to get over and put the infrastructure in to build those. But like, you know, we have still as a country got to rely on the small builder, the small operator. You know, they've always been there, but they're not doing a whole lot now. Yes, they're doing extensions. Yes, they're doing renovations, bathrooms, attics, etc. But we need to get back to building, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8.
They're kind of out of that.
They're kind of out. It slowed right down.
Because we did lose it. We lost a lot of builders following the crash, you know, so that hasn't really, they haven't come back really to the levels of what they were before.
No, that was my third point. I mean, like the tradespeople, look, there's just not enough people going into trade. Everybody is complaining about it in terms of labour shortage in the sector. There's a lot of money in this country. There's a lot of people who want to do work in their homes, who want to do home improvement, renovations, be it bathrooms, attics, extensions, but there's just not enough people. Where do you start? Where do you find them? And when if you find them, maybe the prices are onerous because they've got such a big pipeline of work. They can quote what they want. If they get the job, great. If they don't, well, they'll walk away and they'll get the next job. So they are some real challenges. So if I was kind of put them into a summary, it's, you know, the planning, tapping into infrastructure and so on, and a big improvement, and sorting out the labour skills shortage. Huge issue.
And in terms of the impact, okay, we've looked at sort of those. That's the more professional construction sector.
Yeah.
If you look at the impact then on your hardware DIY customers, as you know, the current economic inflationary and interest rate rise, has that have an impact on that trade? Or
it definitely did. I mean, we did see it's coming back now. Consumer confidence is starting to improve. It was pretty low. It was actually, you know, back almost as low as when we had the economic crash, when you track the consumer confidence and so on. But it's boosted a little bit now, and people are a little bit more confident that they won't lose their jobs and so on. So they're starting to spend and starting to kind of spend what their savings and so on.
What sort of products would they be, you know, going after?
Bathrooms, sanitary ware, you know, home decor, home extensions, attic. So you're talking about insulation. There's a huge amount of grants available now from government-backed schemes as well for, you know, improvement in terms of energy efficiency in homes and heat pumps, insulation and so on, solar panels and so on. So a lot of spend on that, which is going very well. And so we are seeing a big uplift in all of that space. But, and I think things are very much coming back. I'd be very confident now over the next period of time that things are improving. But what I am still hearing time and time again is that people want to do work, but they can't get somebody to do it. So I need to do my bathroom, but I can't get somebody. I need to get somebody to paint the house. I can't. I'd love to build on the corner of our house, and we'd love to expand out, but I just can't get somebody to do it. Now, the other point that was being heard as well was, interest rates.
Yeah.
And that, people have to, if they're going to build on an extension or convert their garage, so they might have to take a top up on their mortgage. They're running a mile from it because that they're already hurt with what was it, 10 successive increases in interest rates in a row, and so on. And you could even hear people who are well paid, good salaries, giving out about it and say, my mortgage is going up by 300-500 a month.
Yeah.
And so when you've got that kind of disposable income taken away, what's going to be sacrificed? Well, home improvement is, holidays are, changing cars are, weekend away are, eating out is, in restaurants is. Those are the type of things we're seeing getting hit for sure, and so on. But it's definitely easing off a little bit now, and there's still lots of activity going on in our sector. We're growing. We had a very good growth period last year, and I'm hoping, we've budgeted to grow by 5 or 6% this year, but I'm hoping that we're going to get up to maybe double-digit growth this year.
Yeah. And I suppose it's again what we have found about and spoken about on the podcast before is the interest rate increases have the impact has been that the construction projects are not viable at the moment.
Yeah,
that and the big ones, your inflation and your interest rate has kind of impacted on the viability.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of blockages you mentioned there. Like, is there ideas in terms of what can the government do to improve the situation? Say, even in terms of you're talking about resources for new workers in the country or cost of construction, is there any sense you have what can be done?
I mean, we've lobbied through the Hardware Association of Ireland. We've lobbied government on a number of fronts and so on. In terms of attracting tradespeople to come here, first of all, they came here in their droves when we were having an economic boom and we were building 93,000 housing units in 2006, and we're struggling to get to 30,000 now. And I'm saying we need to build 50,000 to 60,000 a year, right? To get the housing market right, just to meet the population. So why won't they come here? They won't come here now because they have nowhere to live. So why can't the government say, we'll incentivize you to come here, and we'll give you tax breaks? So for tradespeople who register in Ireland from abroad, why can't they get some sort of tax break, some sort of tax rebate in terms of, to incentivize them coming here, that'll offset the high cost of rental and so on? That being one issue. Or can we help them find accommodation and give them rent allowances? So practical things like that would really help. In terms of trying to encourage people to invest in their homes, there's a lot of schemes around that. I mean, the government have some very good schemes around empty homes and derelict homes, bringing those housing units back into the market that are just sitting there. You can get 70,000 or up to 90,000 of a grant on an empty home, and that can include landlords as well. So that's really important. The next wave that we're working hard on is above the shop living, or in town, above commercial premises. So if we can get them converted in 1, 2, 3 apartments and so on. And then what we have to overcome there is some of the fire regulations, but they seem to manage that in lots of other European cities and towns. But in Ireland, there's some restrictions, and we seem to be different. Why are we so different when technology around fire detection has moved on? And you mightn't necessarily need 2 fire exits and all of these things, where you can put in some improved technology that will alert people and so on, and compensate for that. So we have to learn from what other European cities do, and we have to adopt those things, because there's a huge amount of space sitting there that people can adopt, renovate and bring into the housing market as well as viable homes.
One of the points you touched on earlier was solar panels and all that. What are you seeing in terms of sustainability in products, I suppose, demand for sustainability products? Is that increased?
It has, yeah, definitely. I mean, the practical things around insulation, heat pumps, anything energy efficient or energy related, because the cost of energy has gone up so much, is really rapidly increasing. I mean, what people are looking at is improving thermal performance. So there's a big trend towards advanced insulation materials and so on. But even just existing insulation materials, and which have to be more energy efficient, more sustainable and so on. But there's also some big trends around, obviously, solar panels. You see them far more prevalent. And even in a country like Ireland that we perceive we don't get so much sun, we don't. But now they work much more efficiently with just daylight. And so they're getting better all of the time, and there's far more installers out there operating them. We're seeing a big trend towards green roofs and living walls and so on. Popular, they can provide insulation, they can provide air quality, stormwater runoff, things like that. Recycled and sustainable building materials are also very much in demand as well, where, you know, on reclaimed wood, recycled metal, bamboo, recycled glass, they're all coming to the fore. And in many ways been specified now more so from an architectural point of view for projects which we're seeing, not maybe large residential and so on.
Yeah, we see them in warehouses now, yeah. Quite prevalent in terms of glue lamp, you know.
Yeah, things like that, yeah. So there's certainly a big push on sustainable builds, sustainable products and so on. But it's also what we see is an explosion in terms of the investment in people's homes on sustainability, you know, trying to avail of the grants and just recognising that they need to put investment into their house to bring down their energy bills, which is also good for the environment.
Mm, yeah. One of the things that I kind of just scribbled down here when you were talking about COVID was supply chain, you know, and how that was impacted. Mm. Have you experienced, or in your own model, have you experienced changes to the supply chain? You mentioned, we were chatting earlier on about, you know, you buy from all over the States and Europe and even China. And that. So how is that working now? Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that I would say is that we are down about 40% from what we buy from the UK. And that's as a result of Brexit. It's just too complex, too difficult. And to me, that was an own goal for them. They are definitely suffering as a result of that. So we went to new markets. We turned actually towards Europe a lot more. So we're buying from Portugal, Spain, France, Germany, and opening up with relationships with new suppliers there, where we were traditionally buying from UK and those products. Now, the other thing that's really happened quite a lot is that China has got expensive. So I think the Chinese kind of sat back in COVID and said, hang on, these Europeans are prepared to pay 22 to 24,000 for a container from China. Why don't we just put up our products, our pricing and so on? And that's what they've done. And, you know, there's a big growth in terms of the Chinese economy and that kind of middle market and so on. And they've got great aspirations and so on. And as such, pricing is going up over there. So it's not as attractive to buy from China as it used to be. So we're turning our attention much more to India, Pakistan. Turkey is proving to be a very good location for us in terms of buying product from, particularly anything plastic related. So definitely we're challenged with finding new markets, but we are being successful in doing that.
And how are the, you know, the suppliers in those countries, are what we experience here as an economy, are they experiencing the same thing? Mm. Are they seeing the same inflation, the same problems everywhere?
They are. It was a kind of a global inflation thing. There was, for sure. We know every country kind of faced it and so on. You know, following COVID, so they're having the same problems and so on. The real challenge for us is when we move into new markets, and what we see is the quality. We've got to be very, very careful of the quality. You've got to make sure that you're dealing with the right people. You've got to see their factories. You've got to vet them and audit them very, very carefully and so on. And so on. They have to meet the right standards in terms of build materials. They have to have right certification, and that can be a problem. I mean, because there are serious cowboys out there that would sell you insulation that is just absolutely the wrong stuff. And you do need to know your stuff. And that's why, you know, we've got a big team of very professional buyers who are very, very competent. And when they go out and visit shows, they won't just buy in at the show. They need to go to the factory. They need to vet the people. They need to see the manufacturing process and so on. And then they will know whether this is a viable place or not. But all that takes time, like, you know, from sourcing a new product in a country like India, for example, to actually it arriving in Ireland is a minimum of 6 months. Mm-hmm. So it can be slow. And therefore, sometimes it's easier to stay with the old reliables. Even though the pricing is higher and that. But look, time and time again, we're trying to bring value to our members. We're trying to bring value to our customers to be, you know, to be a stronger group and to grow and expand and so on. So we just have to go searching harder and give it the time.
And are they finding that the issues that we have, say, in terms of labour shortages, housing costs, all of that are
not as bad in other countries as here. This is, you know, a big growing population. We have a young population. We're very affluent. We're one of the wealthiest countries per capita in the world. We are. So we know how to spend money on ourselves. Not every country is like that. I've been in some fairly horrendous places over the last few years that you say, gosh, I wouldn't like to be growing up here.
In terms of your own members, do you see the group individual members, I suppose, taking on new stores or taking on new outlets or even expanding those outlets or even your own? Is there new members you think will you grow the membership? How's the outlook?
We'll definitely grow the membership. We've just made a decision to enter into Northern Ireland, so effectively on the island of Ireland, but you're trading in a different country, different jurisdiction, so you meet a lot of different regulation, not just like labour law, but right through product specification and pricing and so on. So we're working our way through that at the moment.
That seems to be a big trend now in terms of people in the Republic of Ireland expanding into Northern Ireland. The more you talk to people, the more that's actually happening now.
I think it's natural, though, isn't it? That we see Ireland as an island, and you know, why not? Like, there's no visible border there, so like, let's go and trade there. But you know, we've got
regulation and bureaucracy.
Totally different. We've got a different tax regime and a different VAT and a different mechanic of making returns. So we've set up our own legal entity in Northern Ireland and so on, and we're going to trade through that and expand in there. So we've 7 new members in Northern Ireland now that we're servicing, and I would hope to get that up to about 20 over the next 2 years. Now, when you come down south, the existing members are all, most of them are looking to expand. Some of them are happy with, like, I'm happy with my business, I have it at a certain size, I have it at a certain level, and I'm going to continue to maximise from this. Some want to increase to other locations, which is fine, and that. And other ones, a lot of them want to increase in size. They're running out of space, so they're going to say, well, where can I build another warehouse to buy better, to buy more in bulk? I want to buy higher volumes of timber and insulation. I want to buy higher volumes of steel mesh and sewer piping and so on. So if they can buy more in bulk, they can be more competitive. But storage and space is a big challenge, and so they're all the time looking to expand that. So we're seeing a lot of that and trying to help them. There's others who want to just do up their stores and make them more effective, more modern, attract new type of customers. So if you see some of the really successful members that we have split their stores into the trade side, which is fine, which you've got the trade counter, and that's where, you know, the trade staff go. They do their business there, they've got accounts, and then they've got the kind of what you'd call the residential, more attractive side, softer, nicer paint, more homewares, electrical. They've got maybe one of the electrical groups partnered with them. They can have coffee shops in the store, and it's much more about lifestyle, seasonal, aspirational, outdoor living, garden. And you can go from department to department, and they'll have, like, you know, the Weber barbecue displays, or they'll have your coffee shop and then wander into the garden centre. And so on. But yet downstairs or out to one side will be the trade, and they'll be dealing with cement and insulation and timber and high volume products like that.
And how is the internet, is there much online?
It's growing. I really believe that the next generation of tradespeople won't go to the merchants early morning and waste that valuable hour or two. They'll order the product the day before via their phone onto the site, through their account, and the product will be delivered and waiting for them at the site. And I think that's an area that we're working on. We've also launched homevalue.ie as a pilot then. We've 9 members working on that at the moment, and before we expand it out to the rest of our members. And we are seeing loads and loads of transaction on that, but it's very much around everyday household needs. You know, so you're seeing like, you know, water containers, you're seeing water butts, you're seeing garden posts, you're seeing fencing going on, all of these kind of products that we would sell. Solvents, paint is going very well. And then, of course, lifestyle products like garden furniture and barbecues, all selling online. But we're also seeing a huge amount of people browsing online and then coming into the store. And so on, which is a big part of, you know, the digital world as well, that it is your all day 24/7 shop window.
You sift and, through things, yeah, and then decide where
to go. And then decide where to go. And so, you know, and if that is like, you know, have they got a certain power tool or a certain sander, or have they got a certain shower pump? Yeah, we have it. They've done their research and they just come in store and say, I know you've got the Grundfos XYZ shower pump in stock. Could I have that, please?
Yeah. I suppose that's part of what I was going to finish up on, really, is trends, future trends.
Yeah.
I suppose that internet thing is obviously something. Is there other things that you see?
I think you're going to see a lot more sustainable builds, modular building in construction in Ireland. That is definitely growing. And actually, it'll serve a need for us to provide housing solutions faster. We will need to consider all options. I think there's going to be a trend to back in town living. Where we pushed people out for donkey's years, we did in Ireland. We've got to bring life back into towns. We've got to cater for above commercial properties and turn them into viable homes as such, and get over that, because it's just a complete waste and not having, and all the services and infrastructure are there. We don't have to build new and so on. We're just not utilising that. Like Dublin City is a prime example. Like it can be a ghost town from, you know, people, and it's an absolute disgrace. Like it should be a vibrant living place for families and everything like that. There's a big trend to more building more open green spaces and so on, and communal areas as well is going on. In terms of products and so on, there's definitely a shift towards the environmentally friendly products, even down to paint. People are questioning what's in the paint, and the big paint manufacturers are working their way through making them more environmentally friendly and so on. We, you know, obviously there's no lead like the old days and so on in paint, but they still can be improved in terms of the components.
And just one of the things that we've seen also is a trend towards like refurbishing buildings rather than knocking them down and rebuilding. Is that something you're starting to see?
Well definitely, because like a lot of our merchants are very much into that. Like they would be, you know, rather than knocking down, like, you know, refurb and refit and so on. So that trend, I mean, I suppose it's been encouraged by government as well. It's bringing like derelict homes or units that haven't been homes back into the market and so on. So great grants and encouragement for that. So that's also going on. Yeah, trend-wise. One of the big trends as well that's come from COVID is the amount people are investing in their gardens. So, you know, all sorts of garden products have really exploded. It's not just your typical garden furniture set or having a nice lawn or nice paving and so on. People are really starting to go high-end, you know, built-in garden kitchens, you know, built-in barbecues, you know, absolute outdoor canopies and so on. The demand for those products has really exploded.
Yeah, all we need now is the weather.
Oh well, yeah, we're not going to get that.
Look, that was a great chat. Thank you,
sure.
Thank you very
thanks,
much,
Sean.
Paul. I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast.
And no problem.
Thanks for that.
You're very welcome. Thanks a lot.
You can find out more about TWM on twmproperty.ie, and this podcast and future episodes will be available on our website. You can also listen wherever you find your podcasts, and we'll see you on the next one.